Okay. Well, I guess this means that since I got a little unmuted in my ear, that we are ready.
How's it going, folks? Happy Beltane. Brian here. It's Woodwush Radio and Tarot Talk.
All right. So tonight, as you've probably seen on the two advertisements that went out like 20 minutes ago, we're going to be doing the bonded spread, and this is one that I came up with. It's a spread that's used when you've got forces that are inhibiting you for some reason that you don't know what they are, and you need some more insight into either getting rid of them or dealing with them or something along those lines. And this is a very specialty spread, so it's not something that you just whip out in the normal reading, but it's something to keep in mind when you need additional insight into a problem of the nature of the Two of Swords or the Eight of Swords, where you feel like you're constrained in a situation that you don't know how to get out of. A little insight into how the spread came about. I don't know if it's really relevant to much of anything, but I'm into BDSM in my personal sexual life. And there was a time when I was trying to get more and more of my life integrated into each other instead of having this one section that was all metaphysics and paganism and religion, and then this other section that was BDSM and that community, and then another section that was, you know, mundane life with the job and the work and everything like that, and was trying to integrate all of them together. This particular spread came out of that quest to integrate everything. And it was a way to try to get more of a holistic me into not only my spiritual practice, but into other aspects of my life. Plus a couple of deities and several spirits were going, yes, you need to do this. There's nothing like this out there. You need to do it. And so you need to do it now. And then they started kicking me astrally in the head to do it. So it was kind of at that point, not really much of a choice as much as a command from higher beings. And any of you that have had anything along those lines, you know that you can't really ignore them without paying some hefty consequences after a little bit. So, I put this together. The spread layout, if you don't have the graphic in front of you, and we do have it listed up in the chat room right now. It's also out on my website. It's on the Woodwose blog on Tumblr. There's several
on my places. Blog.
If you don't know where it is, just say something. It's because you're not looking. Because it's out there. But think of a basic X, okay? This is based off of an apparatus in the BDSM community called the St. Andrew's Cross. So essentially it's a big X, and think of a man or a person with their legs spread and their arms above their head, okay? You've got positions for the left and right wrist, the left and right foot, and then you have the head and the heart in the middle. So you've got six different places that you can lay these cards out, and there's two cards in each position for a total of 12 cards. And we've got this bandage one. What the heck is this?
I have no idea.
Sunspot, once again.
I'm hoping it's not me.
Anyway, so we've got 12 cards in the main diagram, and then we've got 5 cards that are explanation again. So think about it this way. The first two cards go with the left hand, which would be in the upper left-hand corner. A lot of people would say north-northwest, I think, maybe somewhere right around in the neighborhood of 10:30 or so. Two cards go there. In the 130 position, two more cards go there. Okay, so you've got 1, 2, and then 3 and 4 are the two hands that are above the head. The next two cards would go into the let's see, about 7:30 position, so lower left-hand corner side, and that is the left foot. The next two cards would go in the 5:30 position or so, which would be the lower right-hand section. The following two cards, cards 9 and 10, would be in the middle, right about where a head would be positioned in a body shape, a cruniform. So they're in the center, slightly off-center, and the two heart cards are just below that. So you've got essentially a square right in the middle. And that's those 12 cards. The next five can be laid out anywhere that you're comfortable in a row. On the program that I use, the Orphalese deck tarot cards, I have to have the explanation cards off to the side, whereas in the diagram I've got them shown across the top. Okay, so if that is as clear as mud to everybody, I'm going to go ahead and do a quick layout here of the spread, so that we can start interpreting them, and you can lay them out where they need to go. And we will come back and start interpreting them like we did last week. So cards 1 and 2 are the King of Wands, followed by the Nine of Pentacles, followed by cards 3 is the Fool, card number 4 is the Ace of Wands. So remember, the King of Wands and the Nine of Pentacles go in the upper left-hand corner. The Fool and the Ace of Wands go in the upper right-hand corner. Card number 5 and 6 is the Two of Wands and the Two of Cups. And those are, remember, to the lower left-hand corner. Card number 7 and 8 is Judgment and the Tower. And those are in the lower right-hand corner. The head cards are Justice and the Moon. And then directly below them are the heart cards, which is Death and the Seven of Pentacles. The five extrapolation, I guess you could call them, cards is the Hanged Man, the Two of Swords, Temperance, the Six of Wands, and the Lover. Okay. Now, when we go through this, I'll explain what each position means and what how you should interpret it holistically. But I'm going to give you the cards again, and then we're going to go to some music so that you can listen in while you find these cards and lay them out. So we've got the King of Wands is number 1, followed by the Nine of Pentacles, which is number 2. The Fool is number 3. The Ace of Wands is number 4. Number 5 is the Two of Wands. Number 6 is the Two of Cups. Number 7 is Judgment. Number 8 is the Tower. Number 9 is Justice. Number 10 is the Moon. Death is number 11. And the Seven of Pentacles is number 12. Card 13 is the Hanged Man. Number 14 is the Two of Swords. Number 15 is Temperance. Number 16, oh, I'm sorry, it's not the Six of Wands, it is the Seven of Wands. My apologies, I messed up there. And then number 17 is the Lovers. So important change, not the Six of Wands, it's the Seven of Wands.
That's number 16?
Number 16.
Okay.
Followed by the Lovers, which is card number 17. Okay. So go listen to this. I do want to let y'all know of a few things that are going on. It is the 1st of May, which means that it was Beltania. Yesterday from sunset to just about now sunset. So happy Beltania, everybody. Hope you had a lot of fun out making love in the fields with your friends and lovers and other people so that y'all could, you know, ensure the fertility of the earth and the renewal of the cycle of seasons. This is also, May is apparently, in America at least, National Masturbation Month. So if y'all want to participate and have a smile on your face all month, have fun. And according to Tumblr, at least, today is also International Star Wars Day. So I don't know where that fits into everything, but there's something else.
And why not?
And if Brian would start a song, we'll let y'all finish pulling the card.
Yes, Jonathan Coulton's First of May.
This morning, I had a scone and a large house plan. Then a little conversation with my squirrel and chipmunk friend. I said I'm sick and tired of winter, and I wish that it was spring. Then a little fella named Robin Redbreast began to sing, and he sang, "Ooh, child, what you think of cold? Gonna last forever. Ooh, child, now's the time for all the people to get together outside. 'Cause it's the first of me, first of me. Outdoor fucking starts today. So bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite sleigh. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside." I thanked him for the information. I cried a little when he flew away. I watched an episode of The People's Court and I tried to plan my day. Called up my old lady, she wasn't home, so I called my girl. I asked her if she'd like to join me as I entertain the world. And I said, "Ooh, child, I bring a blanket and I promise I will brush the ants off. Ooh, child, you're gonna like it when we're digging each other's pants off outside. Your favorite lady, or at least your favorite thing. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside." So we went to the park together. We were walking in the midday sun. Met all kinds of people and we fucked everyone. We fucked a lady who sells ice cream. We fucked a man with a tan sharp head. Everyone who needed fucking, well, they got fucked today. So come on, ooh, child, open your mind and your heart. Feel the spirit moving. Child, you feel the warmth of the love when I sing it to you outside. 'Cause it's the first of May, first of May. Outdoor fucking starts today. Bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite sleigh. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in flagrante delicto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. Fucking outside. Fucking
Hi, folks. Sorry about the few seconds of dead air. We were busy discussing things.
Well, let's see. Brian and I were talking, and apparently we can't list this show as for everyone anymore because of that song. It is very graphic.
So much.
But it is also very appropriate for the season. So, yes, while we were talking during the song, we were also getting kicked in the head by Sif to mention that she is a that this is her day as well. She is, as most AD&D players or Marvel Comics readers know, Thor's wife, but what a lot of people don't realize is that she is a fertility goddess and that this is one of her days as well. So that's something else to keep in mind. And given this day of fertility, I think, you know, spread dealing with sex has a lot of relevance simply due to the fact that, you know, sex is fertility and the point of sex is to enjoy it. So, all right, with that said, we're going to dive into interpreting the spread now. The typical way that I tend to interpret this spread and the way I've designed it is you interpret the hands first. So the left hand and then the right hand, and then the left foot and the right foot, just like you laid it out, and the head and then the heart. Then you go back and you reinterpret it in columns, just like you were doing a Kabbalah left, right, and middle column spread. You would interpret the left side of the reading in one way, and then the right side of the reading in another, and then the central section of the reading in another way, with the same sets of cards. This gives it a little bit more overall view of everything. So, starting with the left hand, we've got the King of Wands and the Nine of Pentacles. Okay. Now, this is vanity and power. Okay, the King of Wands is very passionate about what he does. He's a very strong man, and the Nine of Pentacles always represents plenty, wealth, and in a lot of cases, in the negative aspects of it, it's vanity. It's, look at how wonderful I am. I have all of this here. Okay, the position is the power that other people have over the person asking this question. Okay, so typically this indicates somebody that, or people that are outside that have power and are very in control of everything and seem to have all the riches. Okay, that's how I would interpret those two given the position in this spread. Okay, then going to the right hand, we have the Fool and the Ace of Wands. Now, oh my God, I just noticed that the Ace of Wands, never mind. Okay.
In that deck, yes. Yes, it is.
Yes. For those of you that haven't seen the Robin Wood deck, the Ace of Wands is a vertical wand with two sunflowers in full bloom down near the bottom. Extremely phallic. Once
this
again.
Very true.
So I don't know. I think people are trying to tell us something, that today is a day of sex. So, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, let's talk in more action. The right hand is the power the querent has over themselves, okay? It's what the querent is doing to hold themselves back in this instance, and it is something that they can change if they want to, okay? This is something that they know about, okay? So in this situation, the Fool would... Oh, God, my brain is just on... The decency filters have been removed. I don't know what's going on. The Fool, in this case, would be something that is just starting for the querent, the person that has asked this question. They are going into this situation as an innocent in a lot of ways. And given the Ace of Wands, that would follow through with it, because the Ace of Wands is starting out new, with new passion and new energy and new growth, okay? So with the left foot now. The left foot is decisions in the past that the person who's asking for this spread has made that have an effect on the situation as it is now. Okay? So this is, this is decisions that other people have made that are having an effect on the situation now. Okay? So you're dealing with past decisions that may have been made by a mother-in-law or a father or a boss or something along those lines. And in this case, with the Two of Wands and the Two of Cups, it's showing decisions, and it's showing, where your focus is. The Two of Wands is, the focus is on an either-or choice. It's either the world or their spiritual growth. And spiritual growth can mean emotional growth in this context, okay? So they feel that they just come out of probably, I would say, I'm getting the impression that this is a college situation where they got out of college and they felt that they were faced with a choice of having either a good job or a good and enjoyable life, one of the two, okay? And they started putting their focus into whatever it was they decided to have, probably a relationship, given the Two of Cups. And that's where their focus stayed at, to the exclusion of everything else in the world, okay? But these weren't decisions that they made themselves. These were decisions that they let others make for them. And that's very, very important in the context of this reading to remember, okay? They probably just refused to make a decision and refused to make a decision and refused to make a decision, and somebody else finally chose it for them and said, you're doing this. And they felt that, oh, God, now I've got to do yada-da-da-da, and they felt trapped by the situation, which, given the spread, would follow, wouldn't it?
True.
So you've got somebody else making those decisions. Now, the right foot is the decisions that they made for themselves that also have an effect on this. And in this case, it's Judgment in the Tower. First thing that hits me is that these are both major arcana cards, and so these are kind of the ones that jump out and slap you real hard and say, pay attention to me. With the Tower, remember, it's a sudden catastrophic change, not necessarily for the better. And it's also based on a foundation that's weak in and of itself. Okay? So you've got a sudden change in the past that is channeling more of this into the situations they have now. You also have Judgment, where it's a redefinition of yourself, where the person decided that probably they wanted to become more than they are, and so they were redefining themselves, and that caused the sudden change, or the sudden change caused the redefinition. But those two cards in conjunction are feeding into the situation that the person has asked about in this case, okay? So we've got those four factors, the person that's asking the question now, past decisions from others, and past decisions from themselves. Now we move to the head and the heart, and these are a little bit different because these are also affecting the situation, but wherein the head is, the only way that I can explain this is it's a restraint that the person who's asked the question has believed, has rationalized into being, okay? They have thought about the situation, and they have rationalized this into something that is holding them back, but it's a conscious decision made intellectually, not emotionally. The emotional restraints that they've emoted into being are the heart section, which is the next section. Okay? So with the head section, you've got Justice and the Moon. They're not being honest with themselves, and it's coming back to bite them in the butt at this point. Okay? They have decided to ignore sections of their life, as shown by the moon, to keep those hidden and keep those sequestered and keep those away from the rest of their life, and it's causing an imbalance in their life because of that, okay, which is what the Justice card is, okay? Now, the emotive rationalization for whatever this question was is the Death card. They figure if they can delay the change long enough, then it won't really matter. And with the Seven of Pentacles, which is the Patience card and the waiting, that's what's going on at this point. They have emotionally rationalized a long-term delay where they think if they just ignore the situation long enough, it'll go away. Okay? So that's what you've got in the basic reading at this point. Okay? Now, redefining things vertically, we look at the left-hand side, and you've got four cards there, the King of Wands, the Nine of Pentacles, the Two of Wands, and the Two of Cups, okay? And these are outside influences that are having an effect on the situation. Well, we already talked about the people in their life, and the outside influences in this cause, I would say, are society, okay? You've got a gentleman with a lot of power and a lot of authority. Then you've got vanity. Then you've got a choice between emotional, spiritual, and the physical world. And then you've got a very, very intense focus, okay? So what you've got is you've got societal expectations here. You've got the quest for authority, the quest for power. You've got the pride in what you've accomplished. The pride to a point where it becomes destructive itself. You've got, you know, focusing on one thing to a point where everything else goes away and you start losing aspects of your life. Okay, and then you've got, you know, having to choose between the spiritual and the physical. Okay, so what you've got here is you've got society and societal expectations and probably expectations coming from the people around them that are causing this situation, that are causing them to hold themselves back. Okay? And then on the right-hand side, which is the internal influences, you've got the Fool, the Ace of Wands, Judgment, and the Tower. Okay? These are things that are internal to the person. It's their own personal nature. Okay? They do feel like they're going into this as a pure innocent, that they don't know what's going on, that things are starting. And it's starting anew because of a terrible situation that happened not too long ago that caused them to have to redefine themselves. Okay? So you've got society and you've got a babe lost in the woods, essentially. Okay? Then when we reinterpret the middle column, we've got Justice, the Moon, Death, and the Seven of Pentacles, okay? I pretty much already went over this with when I was talking about the head and the heart, but you've got an imbalance here. You've got an imbalance from the fact that they're refusing to make a decision and that they're essentially lying to themselves about the decisions that they have, all right? So here's that reading. Now we look at the commentary as for how to get out of it. That's what I call the commentary in the spread layout that I've written up. It's the breakout, okay? It's how to get out of this situation. What we've done is we've defined the situation. We've brought influences and things that the person may not have thought about and may not realize have a bearing on this, and we've gone, okay, shoved it in their face and gone, here it is. This is it. Laid plain, this is what's going on. This is why you're having this problem. You're thinking too much about trying to be the big man on campus and be the most powerful person that you can be, and because of that, you're ignoring every aspect of your life that could help you. Okay? And that's what we've done with that first section. The breakout is the Hanged Man, the Two of Swords, Temperance, the Seven of Wands, and the Lovers, okay? To me, this immediately says that they need to step back. They need to wait, not for any for something else, but they need to stop trying to control everything, because when they try to control stuff, they feel like they're trapped. Two of swords right there, okay? When they try to control things, they start feeling like they're fighting themselves, which they are, which is the seven of wands, okay? They need to wait, and they need to just let go. Things will happen, and things will come, as shown by the hanged man, but they got to wait, okay? They've got to learn to do more than one thing at a time. But they've also got to learn that there's times to let go, as shown by temperance, okay? And one of the big things that they need to really focus on, they need to focus on their own love life, their partner. They've been ignoring them to the exclusion of everything else, and that's causing a big section of this problem, too, okay? So that's what I'm seeing in this reading, and I hope that in y'all laying it out and looking at all of this, you can see where I'm getting these ideas and thoughts from. Brian, do you have anything to add to this?
Well, I'm just noticing that through the course of the spread, I mean, there's a predominance of, you know, decision-making cards, and with the suggestion in the head and heart cards, the sort of tugging, the sort of two-way battle is carried throughout the entire spread.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the hanged man, I mean, you're talking about a period of kind of just reflecting and going internally and kind of taking that step back and looking at things as they are and trying not to let emotionality or rationality, reason, predominate in how you cope with things. You know, it's a matter of, you know, finding that balance between them.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I think I talked about this when we were talking about the hangman, it's a situation where when the hangman shows up, I immediately go to a point where I'm thinking about somebody that is trying to control the situation so hard that the harder they squeeze the mercury, the faster it fragments and gets away from them. Okay? If they're just cupping it not that anybody would do this, in their palm, it'll stay together and it will stay in one group. But if they start squeezing it, trying to hold it tighter and tighter, it fragments even more. Okay? If you just let it be, if you let the situation be the way it normally would be, the way it is supposed to be, it will stay together, it will be cohesive, you can hold it, you can take it around wherever you want to go, and do whatever, you can drop it into your other hand, you can, you know, put it down on a table or something, and the situation will still be together. But the more you try to control it, the more you try to contain it, the worse it fragments and gets away from you. Okay? The juggling balls will actually stay up and juggle themselves, you just have to let them and trust that they will. And that's, to me, that's what the hangman shows. And whenever
how
I
very
see it,
Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, pretty much. It is.
Close your eyes and hope for the best.
No, it's not hope for the best. It is closing your eyes and knowing that what is right will happen. It may not be what you want to happen. It may not be the greatest thing for you and your mental health, but it is what needs to happen given your life, given your situation. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't make decisions to influence it. You absolutely can. Okay? You can change the situation by moving from one point to another. You can add something into it. But it is understanding that the more control you try to exert over something, the less control you actually have, because far too many other influences are going to be hitting the same situation at once. And the more control you try to have on it, the the more those other influences are going to mess with it. Okay? You can't, there's a thing called, in science, called entropy. And it's essentially the principle of chaos. No matter how many things that you can control in a situation, in a scientific experiment, there are always going to be more factors than that that you can't control. Okay, so the question becomes, at that point, what do you want to do? It's, I've got a concept and I've got it in my head what I want to say. I just have, I'm having problems expressing it because the words don't really function right. The question that you always have to ask yourself is, what is the goal? Are you trying to get action A to happen, or are you trying to get action A to happen repetitively, or are you trying to set up a situation where you know absolutely everything that has caused action A to happen and set up a situation where you can confidently repeat the results that cause action A to happen? Okay. So those are that's something that you've got to decide before you ever start any of this, because if you are trying to just get action A to happen once, then what does it matter what other factors went into it to cause it to happen? Okay? You set up the situation, action A happens, you've accomplished your goal. If your goal, however, is to understand the factors that went into causing action A to happen, then you need to do observation on not only what happened to cause action A, but the influences that caused the influences to cause action A to happen, and the causality chain. And that can be investigated on the backside, okay, and written down. And it's possible that you might, in 1 in 100 million chances, get the exact same causality chain to happen, and it's possible that the exact same factors would come together and cause action A to happen again. And if you can repeat it like that, wonderful, that's great. Okay? But if your goal is to find out every single factor and repeat action A over and over and over and over again, then you need to control even more elements of what's going in to cause action A to happen. Okay? And there's still going to be influences that you're not going to be able to change and not going to be able to control, because it could be the 1 in 100 trillion chance that the gravitational pull of this asteroid that happened to be passing by the planet caused this to happen in this way. And the next time you try to repeat it, that asteroid's not going to be there, and it won't happen that way again. Okay? So the more you try to control, the more that there's going to be there to cause it. So if you're just trying to get action A to happen, you don't need to know all the causality. You don't need to know all the factors that are going into it. And that is at the heart of chaos magic. That is at the heart of the Hanged Man. Okay? It's you want something to happen, that's great. What is the goal? Is it to have it happen once? Is it to have it happen repeatedly? Or is it to know everything that caused it to happen?
That's a very good point.
Makes sense?
Yes. Yes, it actually does.
Because I don't know. We're pulling from so many different disciplines here. We're pulling from magic. We're pulling from spirituality. But we're also pulling from real life and physics and quantum mechanics and, you know, all these other little things that you would never think that would be together, but when you're approaching it as a holistic entity, are all very large factors in there.
Hence, okay? The power of tarot.
Yes.
See,
and
everything relates to tarot. We always say that.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, this reading is pretty much done, and I'm not seeing any of the guests in the chat room who are asking questions about this. So hopefully that means that they understand what's going on and how these cards interrelate with each other. So if that's the case, I'm going to clear this spread and we will do another one. Oh. Okay, there we go. And here we go. All right. The next set of cards is laid out. What I have here is card one is the Wheel of Fortune. Card number two is the Four of Swords. Okay, and those go in left-hand position, which is 10:30. Okay, then in 1:30, we have the Ten of Wands and the Sun. In 7:30 on our clock, we have the Seven of Wands and the High Priestess. And then at 5:30, we have the Nine of Cups and the Page of Swords. In the head position, we have the Two of Cups and the Fool. In the heart position, we have the Emperor and Justice. In positions, let's see, that's 13 through 17, we have the Magician, then the Knight of Pentacles, then Temperance again, then the Tower, and then the Chariot. Okay, so once again, 1 through 17, number 1 is the Wheel of Fortune, number 2 is the Four of Swords, number 3 is the Ten of Wands, number 4 is the Sun, number 5 is the Seven of Wands, number 6 is the High Priestess, number 7 is the Nine of Cups, number 8 is the Page of Swords, number 9, which is the first head card, is the Two of Cups, number 10 is the Fool, number 11 is the Emperor, number 12 is Justice, and in the breakout section, number 13 is the Magician, number 14 is the Knight of Pentacles, number 15 is Temperance, number 16 is the Tower, number 17 is the Chariot. Okay, so we'll give you a little bit to find all those cards and lay them out like that.
And I will play Lisa Teal's Beltane while we wait.
Excellent.
Of Holy Beltane has won the Lord and the Lady. The same night, full moon bright, sacred visions left aside. Lord and Lady merge as one, has won the Lord and the Lady. Has won the Lord and the Lady. Has won the Lord and the Lady. Night, full moon rise, sacred visions left aside. Lord and Lady merge as one, as one the Lord and Lady. Thank you. all with the bounce she brings as one the lord and the lady. Beltane eyed, full moon bright, sacred vision, blessed sight. Lord and lady merge as one the lord and the lady. As one the lord and the lady. As one the lord and the lady. Beltane eyed, full moon bright, sacred vision, blessed sight. Lord and lady merge as one the lord and the lady. Rising and grow as one the Lord and the Lady. Abundance in eternal flow as one the Lord and the Lady. As the lovers sweetly entwined, filled together with a bliss divine. Join together in heart and mind as one the Lord and the Lady. As one the Lord and the Lady. As one the Lord and the Lady. Lovers to be entwined, filled together with a bliss divine. Join together in heart and mind as one the Lord and Lady.
Welcome back.
Okay, well, so hopefully y'all have gotten the cards laid out and are looking at the same spread I am now. I do hope that I would really love to hear some feedback from you guys that you're listening to. Please, if you have comments, if you have questions, if you have thoughts, if you have good job, Joy. You did a good job explaining this. I finally understand it. Send us an email. You can send it to Brian. Brian, what's your email address again?
Woodwost.radio@yahoo.ca.
Okay, or you can send it to me at joy.a.philip@gmail.com. I mean, I really like to hear back from this. The few times I've actually done a live reading of the bondage spread for somebody, they said it was extraordinarily accurate, but I've only done it about four times live. So if this works for you, if this is something that, you know, you want to incorporate in your practice, please let me know. I need the ego boost, too. I like to hear that I'm doing a good job. Anyway, okay. Starting out on the interpretation of this spread. We've got the left hand, which is the Wheel of Fortune and the Four of Swords. Influences other people have over the person now. Okay, and I'm seeing random chance and another waiting period. So we've got too many forces to say any single one is having an influence on whatever this question would be about, with the Wheel of Fortune, and just random happenstance. And the fact that it looks like there's a time period that it's supposed supposed to be just nothing. This is a stasis. This is a time period with a waiting, where there's nothing going on. It's not even growth. It's not even changing. It's not even the natural flow of seasons. This is just a nothing time period. Okay, and those are the outside influences with this question. With the internal influences, with the querent with this, you've got the Ten of Wands and the Sun. Okay, you've got two really opposing forces here. Somebody that is so burdened down that they don't know if they can handle it, and they're having problems hanging on to everything that they've got, and you've got a situation where everything is so out in the open that it's painfully blinding, and there's no secrets, okay? So, okay, that was an interesting one. In the context of this reading, the person could be seeing the situation as being one where they're given too many things that should be held private, and they're supposed to hang on to them and deal with the situations rather than letting somebody else deal with it, okay, given too much responsibilities, given the context of those two cards. With the left foot, you've got the Seven of Wands and the High Priestess, okay? Once again, you've got somebody fighting for the sake of the fight, and more than that, enjoying the fight, and then you've got somebody who is very, very concerned with keeping secrets and keeping the mysteries and guarding those mysteries for other people. So in this case, the past decisions would be too many secrets and too much conflict. Okay? And these are also choices that somebody else made. Okay? Too many things were held back from the querent when in the past, and that's helping cause the situation now. Okay, and there was too much conflict around them, I would say. And then in the right foot, you've got the decisions that they made in the past. And once again, you've got the Nine of Cups, which is, you know, the hearty gentleman who's got, you know, so many wine cups that he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's probably drunk off his butt. Santa Claus in a lot of ways. And then you've got the young girl who is running into a situation with a sword and probably just going to start making a mess of everything. Okay? So in the context of this question and the context of the spread, this would be the querent being a little too satisfied with what they have and not really trying to do much of anything. And when they did jump into it, they made a right mess of everything. And that's what you're dealing with in the past that's affecting the situation. Okay. Now, when you look at the head and the heart, the head situation is they've got extreme focus on one thing and not seeing everything else that's around them. And the innocence of not seeing the cliff that they're about to walk over and not really caring that it's there. Okay. So they're intellectually blinding themselves to situations that should be patently obvious. Okay, they're doing this to themselves. Emotionally, they're trying to be the big person in charge with the Emperor and trying to be so fair to everybody that they're being unjust in a lot of cases. And this is what they've emoted into being and how they've constrained themselves with their emotions because of them being trying to be scrupulously fair. They're not making any decisions. Okay. Reinterpreting it vertically, the outside influences, fight and stasis and chaos and secrets, there's it would be telling me that there's a lot in the situation that the user or the querent is not aware of, and that there's far too much to actually isolate any one thing. And at this point, I would probably do another three-card reading just on that section to try to clarify it a little bit. Because the reading to me is going, no, I'm not going to tell you, because there's so much that they really have to step way back and start over again from a new position, because the situation is really, really muddled. Okay. On the right hand with the internal influences, the Ten of Wands, the Sun, the Nine of Cups, and the Page of Swords, once again, you've got a very innocent, very beginning, very burdensome lot in life in this case. And it's something that is not going well with the external influences. And when you look at the head and heart again, it's almost like they're not trying. They're extremely young, and they are waiting on everybody else to do everything for them. Okay, even though they've been given a lot of responsibility and given a whole lot of ability to do, they're just letting things drift and letting situations make all their choices for them. Okay. The breakout, we've got the Magician, the Knight of Pentacles, Temperance, the Tower, and the Chariot. In this case, it's not good news. The solution to this problem is that they're going to have to completely destroy their life as it is and start over. Brand new, and they've got the emotional strength to be able to do it. They've got the power to be able to do it. They're going to have to do it slowly, and they're going to have to focus on exactly what they want and take concrete plans to manifest it. Okay? The concrete plans to manifest is shown by the Magician. Redoing everything would be the Tower. Okay, the emotional ability would be the Chariot, and doing it slowly with concrete plans on how to get there comes from the Knight of Pentacles. Okay, as well as Temperance, because Temperance says that as well, kind of on a different spin. So I hate spreads like this because it doesn't really give any answers to the user or to the person that's asking the question. What it's saying is, this is your own damn fault. You've refused to make a decision and refused to make a decision and refused to make a decision, and everybody else has made the decisions for you, and now you're screwed, and the only way out of it is to start over.
Huh. Fair enough.
And that's the only thing that I can interpret this as. But then again, we're not reading for any one person, and there's not really a question on the table either. Okay? So that could be part of the reason why this is so scattered. Okay? But given the cards, given the spread, this is how I would interpret it for somebody that came to me for a reading. Okay? And so that brings us to the end of our first hour. And let's see, do you have anything, Brian, with this?
Can't say as I do, unfortunately.
this is
one of those spreads that's going to take some time for me to sort of process.
Okay. Well, in that case, tell you what, for the second half of this, we can look at one of my other spreads. It's the Life Choices spread.
All right.
And that one's a little bit easier. It's a total of, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cards done in kind of a zigzag up. And I'll talk you all through it when we get back. And let me gather these up, and we can go back over these.
You want me to play some sort of a tune?
If you feel like it.
Come on, Scrolly. Let's do this thing. Rabbits are fertile. Let's do that. S.J. Tucker's Rabbit Song.
Trickster came a-calling to find a totem here to teach the foolish heart of man without installing fear. Many came and many went, but still the trickster paused. Bear and cat and tiger tried, but had too many claws. Dog and wolf, the wise indeed, had teeth, 'twere quite a fright. And owl with his tawny eyes could only see at night. No, the trickster said at last, teachers, I see many, but my way is full of laughter, and in you I see not any. But beneath the tree where eagle sat, coyote told the tale of silly hares cavorting in the old country of Wales. Raven stared unto the sun, and crow sang awful songs, and a rabbit sat a-listening with ears so wondrous long. Aha! The trickster danced a dance of joy and victory sweet. He laughed a laugh and swooped a swoop and landed at their feet. Of all here now, the trickster said, you are the very beasts. But a rabbit said, I'm sorry, sir, but of all we are the least. The trickster smiled and raised a hand and spoke, I have a plan. The four of you shall help me to teach the heart of man. Raven, with your love of light, the sun you'll steal soon. For the gift of warmth I give to man to be the greatest boon. And crow, you silly creature who sings without a voice, teach man of pride and helping, you really have no choice. Coyote, my friend, together we'll spin many a tale at night, and teach man by our naughtiness what really should be right. At last he turned to rabbit with a twinkle in his eye. You'll be my favorite creature, and here's the reason why. Your eyes are bright, your feet are swift, your ears hear around the bend, and your very simple humbleness will steal the heart of men. Together we shall thwart the pains the gods do throw to us, and turn aside their fiery darts with merriment and mirth. And when time comes that men forget the lessons animals render, 'twill be the humble rabbit that mankind will remember. And round the trickster the animals throng, the birds and all the beasts, and humbly bow to the king they found, who thought himself the least.
Hi, welcome back to the show, folks.
Oh, all right. Well, okay. Brian was talking, and I thought I was going to talk, and I don't know. We got confused. The life choices spread that I was talking about a little earlier is a fairly basic one. It's seven cards. You start with the number one card at the bottom in the center. Okay. You lay the second card directly to the northeast of that card, okay? Then the number two card has two cards coming off of it. It's the first branching, and that is has one card to the northeast and one card to the northwest, okay, from the number two card. So then the number three card is the first choice, or actually the number two card is the first major choice you come to. Number three is the outcome of that choice that you don't pick or that you're not likely to pick. The number four card is the path that you are likely to pick, and that's why the next set of cards come off of that. From the number four card, you lay one more card to the northwest of it, and then that is the second major choice that's coming up. And then once again, you lay two more cards to the northeast and to the northwest of that last card. So you have a pathway that zigzags. from the number one card to the number two card to the number four card to the number five card, and then you have another pair of choices, okay? The first major choice is the number two card, which is the first one to the northeast of the number one card, remember? Then the next major choice is the number five card. And in this case, what I've laid out is the Ten of Swords in the number one spot, the Knight of Wands in the number two spot, which, remember, is the first major choice. The number three card is the Two of Pentacles, which represents the choice that you have but you don't take. The number four card is the Ten of Wands, which is the one that you're most likely to take. The number five card is the Devil, which is the second major choice. And then from there, the number six card, which is to the northeast of the number five card, is the Queen of Wands. And then the one to the northwest is the Knight of Swords. Okay? Now, I'm just going to go in and start telling you about how I would interpret this while you're pulling those cards out. What I would start with is in the number one position. That's the problem as it is now, okay? That's where the questioner is at this moment. And they're feeling really betrayed, okay? Obviously, they've just been stabbed in the back. They're laying on the ground. They're bleeding out. 10 swords sticking in their back. So a lot of people have apparently betrayed them, okay? Or at least they feel like that. So they have a choice. They come to a point here very soon, where it's a major choice point for them, and that's the Knight of Wands, okay? They can strike back if they choose to, okay, by attacking and attacking boldly and, you know, getting right into their face and just making a mess of things if they really wanted to. The two choices that they have from there are the Ten of Wands or the Two of Pentacles, okay? Now, I want to stress something. Anytime you come to a choice point in here and there's only two cards represented, these are the two major branches that you have. There are a whole slew of other choices that you could make at this point, okay? But these are the two that are most likely to be the biggest choices that are presented to you, okay? So from the striking out position, they can choose to keep walking on the tightrope and juggling everything and not doing anything about it, just trying to be everybody's friend again, or they can take on themselves a whole bunch of burdens and keep soldiering on, okay? Most likely what they are going to choose is to take on the burdens and keep going. And that's what the Ten of Wands is representing in this, okay? So the outcome of that major choice branch is taking on those burdens, keep going, and as a result of that, they're going to be presented with a time where they feel like they're taking on too much and that they're now stuck because they're unwilling to let go of any of it and keep going, okay? They see the light at the end of the tunnel, but they're stuck by their own decision to hang on to the treasure chest, even though it's very obviously bolted down, and they're not getting anywhere, and they're unwilling to let go of the chest to actually get out of this situation and go on with their life, okay? And the choice there is between internal conflicts in their own self, where they're, you know, fighting a war that can't be won, essentially, as shown by the Knight of Swords, or actually blossoming into another person that realizes that this is a self-made situation and they can get out of it anytime they damn well want to, and going on from there, okay, which is shown by the Queen of Wands, all right? So what you got is they start out by being backstabbed. They can lash out. Their first major choice point, the one that they are most likely going to choose, is to take on additional burdens and keep growing. and then they can either wallow in self-pity and, you know, being betrayed and back hurt and, you know, just not, and keep fighting the same battles over and over and over, or they can grow beyond that and become somebody different, okay? And that's just a really simple life path of what's coming up, and this is not very far in the future. This is probably a time period of about 6 months or so, but this is one of my other main spreads that I go to, the life choices path, and this is the one that I was talking about that I saw some guy do at a convention 12 years ago. Late, it was like 3:30 in the morning. I happened to be sitting in a conference room. He walked in, sat down. We started chatting. Found out that he read tarot. I asked him to do my tarot cards. He pulled it out and did one of these, and I've never seen it anyplace else. Okay, but off of that one reading, I got this spread out, and it's actually a really, really good spread when you need to know what's coming up so that you can start making preparations for it. So, you know, that's...
It does seem like an interesting spread.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as, it's not quite as simple as the five-card spread. It's not quite as detailed as the Celtic cross. But it gives... This is where I get into quantum physics and mechanics for a little bit, because it relates back to the tarot, once again. And talk about how the future is always in flux. Everybody talks about how the future is supposed to be a destination you get to, kind of like a path that you're on. You have the path stretching behind you as far as it goes, and you have the path stretching in front of you as far as it goes, and you can just keep walking on that same path, and you're eventually going to get to your destination. Except that's not what the future's like at all. I'm going to quote Doctor Who here and say it's a big ball of timey-wimey stuff. But actually, more accurately speaking, when you're not in the middle of going through time and going through a time period of your own, what winds up happening is you've got this fan of decisions in front of you every moment of every day. Every moment you've got choices that you could make that could completely alter everything in your life. You've also got an array of choices that you could make that would do very little to nothing, okay? You could make a choice right now to blow your brains out with your pistol for no particular reason other than you want to get out of this life, and that completely changes everything. Or you could choose not to brush your teeth, and 20 years from now, you could just not have any teeth. So you've got all kinds of choices at every second, okay? Any one of those choices have the possibility of changing everything. So if you want to look at it from a subjective point, imagine in front of you the ribs of a fan spreading out all around you. That is the array of choices that you have. As you move down one, the rest of the fan disappears, and you come to another point where you've got another fan of choices. And this continues to happen as long as you care to keep moving down those pathways. Okay?
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Pretty much, yeah. The quantum physics comes into it because it's theorized that at any one point, you choose option A, but other alternate versions of you choose every other option it's possible to choose, and they all exist in their own fans of choices in their life. And through dreams, through tarot, through magic, through astral projection, you can step off of your fan of choices and look at another version of you's choices as to what would have happened if. And you can do this for the present, you can do it for the future, you can even do it for the past. Okay, and so that's where quantum physics gets really tied into metaphysics and gets really, really confusing, and most people's brains lock up at that point. It gets really interesting when you start talking about this. But this spread, this life choices spread, gives you a glimpse, if you're not good at visualizing the array of choices in front of you, as to what is in front of you in actuality. And like I said, it only gives you the most likely choices that you're going to have and the most likely choices that you're going to make. Okay? All the little ones where you can, you know, kick your cat across the room or not pay your bill or, you know, whatever, that are a minor choice but still a choice, are not going to show up in this. Okay, they're going to show up in other sets of spreads, and you can find them out, you know, with a little meditation, a little self-introspection, some astral projection if you want, but they're still there. Just because they're not showing in this spread doesn't mean that they don't exist. So
precisely.
This is, you know, this is a little, you know, glimpse into the future, a lot more reliable glimpse I've found than something along the lines of the Celtic crossbred, which is, you know, answers to a specific question rather than what's coming up in my future, which seems to be what most people tend to focus on when they start thinking about the tarot cards. It's, oh, what's going to happen next week? What are the lottery numbers? You know, I've gotten those kinds of questions so many times, it's almost ridiculous.
I wonder how you would even figure
out
the lottery numbers.
Well, if I had the lottery numbers, I wouldn't be doing this. You know, I would have won already and be sitting at home and, you know, not worrying about any of it.
Perhaps.
So.
But isn't the whole point of being wealthy to, like, have the time to engage in things like tarot and esoterica, like, full-time and, you know...
Well, it depends. If you ask a rich person, they may say the point of being wealthy is to make more wealth. You know, I've
and if you ask Jim Carrey, he'll tell you the point of being wealthy is to, I don't know, get all deep or just tell people your life's boring or something.
Personally, I think the point of being wealthy is so that you don't have to scrabble for an existence. Wealth is wonderful in that you can stop focusing on living or existing and actually start focusing on living a quality life where you can, you know, start focusing on things like esoterica and magic, and you don't have to have the interruption of, oh, I've got to go to work now and earn money so I can, you know, have food so that I can pay my bills. So I can't meditate this morning. I'm going to have to, you know, skip that so I can go to work. You know, so it's a situation like that. Wealth is a wonderful means to an end, but it is not an end. It is go ahead.
And, well, I was just thinking that the interesting thing is, though, that wealth is, it's kind of a relative thing, because, I mean, the idea of having wealth and having the, you know, the resultant luxury from it only exists because of the economic and cultural structure that we live within. Whereas, like, if you're talking about, like, okay, Stone Age cultures, say, I mean, esoterica really isn't something that they go all out to pursue, but neither is wealth, because, you know, they hunt, gather, do whatever, and then they use their leisure time for whatever, I don't know, whatever a Stone Age hunter would do in his spare time.
There is that. So, yeah, wealth is relative depending upon the society you're in. And wealth is also relative to the person. I mean, I've known quite a number of people that didn't have two pennies to rub together that thought that they were the wealthiest people in the world because they had somebody that was dear to them in their life that they could be with. They had things that were of interest to them. They had quality time with not only themselves, know, shelter, and they had their food, and they had their fire and everything like that. And they were, you know, perfectly content, and they didn't have, you know, 16 iPhones in their house and internet and, you know, the HDTV. You know,
very
my
true.
Own, you know, my own situation, I consider, I wouldn't be considered to be wealthy by those that are after material things, because we've got a 40-year-old television that came from my grandfather. It's still tube-driven, and it still has vacuum tubes in it.
Nice.
But it works fine. It displays everything. We've got we don't have cable. We've got the digital TV antenna that's stuck to our window. We've got internet access. We've got a phone. You know, we have to worry about cash sometimes, but I've got my lovely wife. I've got my two cats. My daughter comes over occasionally. I've got friends online, and I don't consider myself to be poor. I consider myself to be materially deficient in some cases, and it would certainly be easier with more money in my life, but that doesn't make me not wealthy. You know?
Very true. Speaking of which, folks, it occurs to me that I don't recall the last time that I've actually read off the phone number for people to call in if they want readings or whatever, but the number is 646-564-9966. So if you are motivated to call into the show tonight with comments, thoughts, a request for a reading, by all means, go for it. Otherwise, we can fill hours and hours with random conversation. You guys know that.
Yes, if you've been listening, you know that we are very capable of doing that and, you know, just talking to each other about everything.
This is true. And Joy, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you sometimes can use the extra cash if you want to, you know, promote yourself
advertise
and your
myself.
Services, go for
yeah.
it.
Look, not only do I do the readings here for free if you want to, you know, get a reading so that we can practice, but I also sell readings, and I do that through my website. It's at http://aaronsjournal.com, ErinsJournal.com. Right there on the front page, when you load it up, you're going to see my smiling face, and the very first entry is Tarot Readings by Aaron. And Aaron is my magical name. It is my Wiccan name. My, you know, the actual name that appears on my birth certificate is Joy. So, you know, that's how you know me here, and that's fine. But if you would like a reading, a detailed reading, I've got, you know, several different readings that I do. To help the cross and bond the spread of two of them. There's also an astral spread, an astrological spread, where we deal out all 78 cards into 12 piles representing the 12 houses, and then I interpret those cards based on the context of the house that they fall in, and give you a very, very detailed reading about your life, essentially. That one's kind of expensive because I've never been able to do one in under an hour and a half. So it's
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And when the moon is in the seventh house, you know you've got something going there.
The age of Aquarius. No. But yeah, but when you start talking about stuff like that, you're talking about a life reading more than anything else. Because, 78 cards dealt out to 12 houses. You're going to get at least 7 in every single house. And every single one of those houses means something different. I mean, when you're talking about Gemini, you're talking about relationships with siblings, you know, because that's what Gemini is about. And so you've got 7 cards in there that you're interpreting in the context of relationships with your relatives, okay? And then you've got, you know, in Capricorn, you're talking about your psychic ability. And, You've got seven cards that you're interpreting in that context, and there's times when it comes up as just, you know, a scattershot set of cards that are all dealing on the subject, and then there's times that it comes up as this is a timeline of this subject in your life. You know, so you've got to pay attention to the cards, you've got to pay attention to how you're reading and the impressions that you're getting while you're doing that reading, and it takes a whole lot out of the reader. I mean, it really does. I've done it about six times, and it's been a major, major deal every time.
Undoubtedly.
But if y'all want stuff like that, please, you know, go to the website. PayPal is the order of the day. And we could all use the cash. So.
True.
Other than that, I don't know. I feel like there's. It seems like that there is questions out there from that somebody has in relation to either the cards or the readings or the interpretations of the cards or something. So please, if you do have those questions, call in. If you're downloading the show later and have the question, write it out in an email, send it to us. We gave you our email addresses earlier, joy.a.philip@gmail.com.
And woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca.
Yeah, and I've got a link to an email page on my website, too. So if you can't remember that, there's a little button that says Email Aaron, and you can click on that. You get this page, and you fill it out and send it to me, and I'll get it. You know, so please, come in with your questions. I don't bite, at least not unless you really want me to, and then, you know, you should feel free to send me your email address.
And that might be a costlier request.
Well, we don't ever sell sex, because sex is wonderful. It is free. It is something that should be used to worship with, and not just worship the deities and the gods and the fertilities of the earth. Sex is something that should be used to worship the other person as well. And that's something that I personally find reprehensible about the current American attitude towards sex, is that it's always used as a weapon and very, very rarely used as a gift and something that should be shared between two adults. The BDSM kind of gets back to that somewhat. I know people get confused because they hear, you know, oh, well, I got spanked while I was tied up. And they go, ooh, I don't want to get beaten. Well, it's not about the beating, okay? It is about the deliberately putting yourself into a vulnerable position with somebody that has the potential to truly harm, who refrains from doing that out of concern for you, and then facing yourself internally with no anything standing between you and your own psyche. The point of a lot of the restraints is so that you physically can't escape. And once the physical aspect is taken away, it becomes very easy to focus on the internal landscape. And yes, your butt may be sore, you may be getting a bruise tomorrow because you were spanked, but the attitude of internal focus and the internal aspect of, okay, my body is suffering, and that is freeing my mind to go and explore my relationship with the all. It's the same principle that you get with the monks in the Catholic Church who use the self-flagellation and the mortification of the flesh to become more spiritual. The exact same thing. Plus,
it's like a hair shirt with leather.
It is. It really is. And it can be.
Well, and it reminds me, too, of I think it was Crowley that listed eight separate ways to alter your consciousness. And pain and sex and all these kinds of different ones are all part of that list. You know, like, ways to alter your consciousness so that you can explore you know, internally, externally, you know, astrally, etc.
And go ahead.
Sorry, and I was just thinking there's a book that's sitting on my shelf and has been for a while now called Sacred Kink that goes quite thoroughly into that sort of, you know, concept, and, you know, it talks about how being a slave is one way that, you know, a particular...
Who's that book by?
Oh, God. The name that comes to mind is something like Lee something or other, but I'm pretty sure... Sacred Kink is by Lee Harrington.
Oh, okay. Because there was a book that I have the bondage spread as part of called Sacred Kink. That was by Lupa and Taylor Elwood. And it addresses many of the same ideas, or kink magic. That's what it is, kink magic.
Well, this one has four people posed on the cover with, like, various toys and stuff, so...
Well, the whole thing is that you don't... Everybody tends to fixate on, you know, the toys and the helplessness and, you know, oh, I'm going to get tied up and stuff. And that's certainly part of it, but it's only a vehicle. Like you said, it's about alteration of consciousness, okay? It's about removing control from yourself and handing it to someone else. If I'm tied and I can't get away from whatever it is, and I'm also naked, and somebody is standing behind me, then I have given my control to that person, and I am trusting them not to abuse it. I am trusting them to treat me in a manner that would be, I guess you could call it nice, but it's not necessarily nice when you're talking about BDSM. You're talking about somebody that is not going to hurt you. They will abuse you. They will hurt your body, but they will not hurt you, your person and your psyche, okay? And this is where the kink community is really, really good about policing their own. People who are abusers are generally found pretty quickly, and everybody's warned about them, because this is very much a trust relationship. Mary's just jumped on the extension, so she's probably going to come in with her own commentary now. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Brian. Joy and I do see some of these aspects a little bit differently. I do tend to read more about what's going on currently, and there is a big potential for a lot of abuse.
There is.
So you can't just walk up to the first person you see in a pair of black leather pants and go, hurt me, but not really.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't work.
It is, yes, it is very possible to get very, very hurt. The idea, though, is that you find somebody that clicks with you, that you can be with, that you can surrender your control and your self-power to, and allow them to do things to you in a safe, consensual way. And she's telling me to shut up.
Part of the issue is not walking in blind, but a lot of it is negotiation, which Joy hasn't really mentioned. You negotiate every single aspect of the scene that is going to happen to you, preferably in writing if necessary,
but in advance.
Before anything happens, you meet with a person repeatedly in a very safe place, like Starbucks, like your grandmother's house, wherever you feel safe. You make sure when you go to see someone that you have told at least two other people, I am going to this address. I'm going to leave this address at this time. And if you do not hear from me after that time, help. So that you are never, ever floundering around on your own and in a very dangerous and bad situation. Because trust me, people can fake that they're the nicest person in the world and slowly seduce you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a danger in the BDSM community, but I will tell you this, as a top who tops from the top and the bottom, it is a way for me to do several different things. As with Christianity, there's the expiation of sin. I've been a very bad girl, punish me so it doesn't hurt anymore. Because once your mom spanks you, or once your mom punishes you, it's over with. Done. All is forgiven, life is good again.
You can stop beating yourself up and you can, you know, move on with your life after that.
Exactly. There is the see what I can take, which is the submissive boast.
The endurance person.
There are ways to explore within yourself why this triggers that and how to release that pain and let it go so it can no longer hurt you. And that can affect you in very strong ways that you may not be aware are going to happen. Another reason why the person who is with you and facilitating this needs to know this has to stop now and that needs to happen instead of just continuing with this.
And in a lot of cases, you set up a prearranged set of signals so that if it's getting to be too extreme for you and you're getting into a bad place mentally, you can say this word, which is called a safe word, or give the safe signal and they'll stop and let you recover and, you know, stop the scene and pull you down and let you get your feet back underneath you. And like she said, it is, you know, expiation of sins. It is the endurance thing. But what she's talking about, I think, is also the exploration of and the
exhumation and disposal of badness.
Basically wearing down a very, very sensitive place until it's no longer sensitive. It's desensitization of a bad trigger. It's a way to get rid of things that put you into a bad mental headspace, get a way to get rid of PTSD and deal with it. I mean, when Mary and I first met each other, I was deathly afraid of bees. I would go into full-blown panic attacks and scream and shake and jump up and down. There was a bee that stung me at one point. I knocked it down, and I spent the next 3 minutes stomping on it, just over and over and over while I was screaming. Through being exposed to bees over and over and over and being with them and seeing them and having them land on me and not sting me, that desensitized that section, and now I can, you know, if a bee comes at me, I'm not shrieking and running off, you know, like a wild woman. I'm just, you know, okay, it's here. I'm going to be calm. Okay, it's landed on me, and now I'm going to freeze. Oh, good, it's flying off, and now I can breathe. And it gets you through that, too, and this is another way of doing that.
So it can be used as therapy. It can also be used as a form of meditation, because there are times when you're going to have the highest high you can imagine, never mind with drugs, and it'll be all without drugs. And it will even bring you into flying the next day or two.
It's the endorphin release, because, I mean, the pain, let's face it, you know, the body has certain responses to certain stimuli. You get hurt, drugs, the chemicals in your brain get released, the receptors get them, you get high, or the pain diminishes because of the body fighting back against the stimulus of the owie. This, the BDSM is another way to activate all of those endorphins and get them out and into the body and into the brain safely without permanent damage. I mean, you're standing there, you've got a skirt, which is essentially a handle that's about 18 inches long. It's got a number of tails on it, and you're hitting somebody in the back over and over and over again. Okay, this is a ritual in Wicca. It is paying for the learning you're going to receive on your initiation in the coven. Okay, this is called scourging. This is a normal standard practice in Wicca as one of the sacred holy rites.
Please define Wicca to be that British invention that happened in the 50s, not the overarching term Wicca meaning neo-pagan.
Right. Neo-pagan is something completely different. Wicca is a very specific subset of that.
It's like the difference between a foot-washing Baptist and a Methodist.
Mm. There are massive differences, and people get very, very upset about it. Anyway, and it's a light stroking. It's no worse than scratching somebody's back with your nails, okay? It can be. It can also be very, very heavy. And in those rituals, in those rites, in that time period when you're getting hit, your brain is reacting to release those chemicals. But there's very little damage to the body. And you get the benefit of those chemicals being released. Ah, Mary, hang up.
Yes, sir.
The cats are bugging her for food, so.
Ah, yeah.
I fed them, I know, but they're still right there in front of everyone. Anyway, it's a way to get those chemicals out and out of the brain and into the body so that you're reacting to them without permanent injury to the body, okay? Because let's face it, a scratch is going to heal, okay? The floggings are not much more severe than that. They can be. If you get somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, you can wind up paralyzed, and I have heard of cases where that has happened. But if you have somebody that knows what they're doing and is safe and is practicing with other people who are also knowing what's going on, it, you know, it's no worse than getting a couple of scratches on your back. There's some redness. There's a little soreness the next day. There may be a few broken capillaries. You don't want to put alcohol on it. But, you know, 2 days later, it's gone. And you've had this, you know, very intense internal trip of experiencing your own subconscious and your own mind and what's been going on. For, you know, something that, you know, hurts for a couple days, and that's it.
It's true.
You know. And this is honestly not what I wanted to get into, but this is, you know, this deals with the hanged man, this deals with paganism, this deals with Wicca, this deals with neo-paganism. There's, even in the Alexandrian Book of Shadows, there's a way that you can astrally project by using the scourge on somebody. And you literally tie them up. Granted, it's with very light thread, but the point is to cut off blood circulation to the extremities, and then you whip them with the scourge in an upward stroke, encouraging their soul to leave their body through the top of their head.
Huh.
You know, and that's, you know, one of the, another ritual that you do.
Well, it brings me to mind of that chapter in Ray Buckland's Complete Book of Witchcraft, the Big Blue Book, if any of you folks is familiar with it. Yeah, the Witch's Cradle or whatever they call it. That,
yeah, that's straight from Gardnerism.
Oh, undoubtedly. Yeah. I mean, from what I can tell, I mean, Gardner was just really into BDSM, but it was just a hush-hush thing, so he incorporated it into witchcraft, and, you know, it's totally legit, people. It really is.
Well, it's totally legit on its own, and it's totally legit in a sacred sense, too. I mean, people, here's a perfect segue. You want to talk about the Witch's Cradle. What it basically is it's a straight jacket, except it's a full-body straight jacket that is put on a swing, and you get into it, and you are pushed, so you're spinning around and swinging back and forth, and you lose your orientation with the ground, and then you meditate. Well, you know what? The ancient druids were doing this back in 400 B.C. It was a ritual where they would go into a cave. The cave would be sealed behind them, so that it's completely dark. They would lay under a white ox hide, and a stone, a heavy 100-pound stone, according to reports, would be put on top of them. they would spend several days in there in isolation with this weight on them. So you've got the elements of sensory deprivation, you've got the disorientation, you've got the extra weight on them, and then all at once it would all be taken off, the cave would be opened, and they would prophesy. And this is another way of doing a divination. This is another way of doing sensory deprivation and having a whole nother consciousness shift. Okay? But it's got the same elements that the witch's cradle has in it, that, you know, flogging in the BDSM has, that, you know, you have in the sacred circle with Wicca now. It's the same elements. You have, you know, the disorientation, the lack of sensory input. And that's the big part. When you take away the senses, because we've got five senses. We've got sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell. Okay? Well, when you take away the ability of the brain to have any of those happen, you take away that input, it forces the brain to cannibalize itself, to turn inward to your own psyche, in an attempt to get input. And that's what sensory deprivation is about. That's what the witch's cradle is about. That's what flogging is about. That's what, you know, the astral projection is about. It's about turning your own mind into yourself and looking at your own internal psyche without all of the filters that we've got put in place to exist day to day, like, and the self, I mean, self-delusions and the, you know, machismo of the people around you, and without the sexual encounters and things like that, because all of that is, you know, a sensory input. Once you get rid of all of that, your brain starts looking at itself, and you start looking at yourself without filters. You stop worrying about what somebody else is thinking about you, start worrying about what you are, and you start getting in tune not only with your deities, but with yourself. And it just makes you a better person overall. But, you know, BDSM is a dangerous thing. It can be very dangerous. It can be very, very abusive. It's not something that you just want to try to jump into with both feet. You do want to try to find people, a group in your area, if you're interested in it, and then spend at least a year getting to know the people, getting to know their personalities, going to the different group functions, watching what's happening, listening to the different talks and reading up about it before you even try to start putting yourself into that position, because it is a huge, huge step in trust. Because you are essentially saying to a stranger, I am putting myself into a position where you can really hurt me, and I know it, and I trust you not to do that. And then it's on them as to whether or not they're going to live up to that trust or not, okay? And a bad trip can really ruin everything. Celtic thunder turning away. We don't have that there, Mary. He doesn't have that. We have it here, but it's got to be broadcast over. Mary's got a song that she wanted you to play, except you don't have it, Brian, so we can't.
Sadly, no.
No, I don't have those. Anyway, so that's the segue for tonight. That's the huge segue. And it does relate back into tarot, because it can be used as a divinatory tool. It can be used as a prophesying tool. But more than that, it's used as a self-improvement tool and a way to look at yourself and, you know, fix things that you find wrong with you. Because after all, that's, you know, what all of magic is about. That's what all of tarot is about, is fixing yourself.
Well, that's basically what spirituality in general is about. I mean, aside from connecting with your understanding of deity, there's that very important inner work that has to happen, that, you know, you identify and cope with the things that hold you back.
Exactly. And you can't until you know.
You know, all the, like, lingo and, you know, doctrine and all that essentially is it depends on the tradition you choose to study, but ultimately it's irrelevant. You know, the key to every spiritual path is that you do the inner work so that you can become a better you.
Mm-hmm. And that inner work is what we're talking about. That's, you know, BDSM is just an element of it. It is a way of surrendering control to somebody else for a temporary time period. And there are some personalities who find quite a bit of freedom in submitting to another person's will. And for them, that's, you know, great. I find it's the surrender is wonderful for a time period. And then I get irritated with it and don't want to play anymore and refuse to play and start rebelling. And, you know, Mary's the same way, so we swap off. We're what's called switches. One of us takes control of the other for a specific period of time. And then when, you know, the others, when the time period is done, we swap back to, you know, just being us and partners. And there's, you know, other people that are very very needy in that they need somebody to tell them what to do. They don't want to make decisions on their own. And those, you know, and if that's what works for them, that's what works for them. And nobody else has a right to judge because that's their personality. As long as they understand that and can work within the world, within those confines, and they can find somebody that they're willing to submit to, there's nothing wrong with it. There are times, however, and the chance of abuse is really, really high in those that play with BDSM, especially ones that won't be social in it. When I say that the BDSM community is very good about policing their own and getting rid of the abusers, I'm talking about the people that know each other. This dominant knows this submissive, and this submissive knows those four dominants, and these people are all in a group, and they're all friends, and they all know each other. Well, if somebody from the outside comes in, and they get to know them, and they realize that they're an abuser, they'll throw them out, usually, and then warn other groups that they know of that this person is sniffing around and that they're an abuser. Okay, so you're probably least likely to find a serial abuser in a group situation like that. It happens, and like Mary said, it can be very common, and you can counterfeit anything for a little while. But most likely when you get somebody that you hear about was chained in a dungeon downstairs and whipped until they bled, you're finding somebody that was supposedly a dominant who wasn't part of any of the communities and not participating in anything, and then they had the opportunities because they said, well, I'm a dominant, you know, and were on the correct website saying the correct things, that they were able to fool somebody. Well, you can't really fool somebody over a long period of time when you're face-to-face with them. You can do it really easily online. So, you know, you got to be careful about stuff like that. If you want to get involved in it, there's ways to do it. And usually you start looking around in your own neighborhoods for groups like that. Anyway, so we've gotten completely off the topic of tarot, but it's still related.
No, we haven't. Nothing
everything
is unrelated.
Relates back to tarot.
Actually, it brings to mind Pagan Polyamory, which is an interesting book I read years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually had tarot spreads that somehow related to, like, polyamory. But, you know, within a kink community, I imagine that, you know, polyamory comes into play, you know, to some degree, because, I mean, it's obviously the other way around as well.
Since we only have 5 minutes left, this is probably a discussion that we should hold on to next week.
For another fertility festival.
Well, no, I mean, seriously. Because you're talking about polyamory, which is a group marriage, okay? But what you're actually talking about is a group partnership. And that's how it has to be looked at. It has to be multiple people who are all equal to each other, who are all cooperating for the good of all. Okay, what it actually turns into more often than not is this couple and that couple are together in the same house, and they occasionally swap partners. And then you start getting jealousy, and you start getting one-upmanship, and you start getting a lot of other problems that come along with that. And that's a
yeah.
whole other discussion.
Oh, yeah, we could go on for a while with that one, too.
Oh, God. Because it runs rampant
it
not only in
terrible.
The kink community, but also in the pagan community. Because pagan
oh, yeah.
community, the sexual morals are a lot freer. It's a lot more 60-ish, where, you know, okay, you want to have sex, we're going to have sex because it's a celebration of life. And it's the deities. And there shouldn't be anything ashamed of showing your body.
Oh, we're going to have so many discussions about inner work and like, various ways to address things like jealousy and, you know, oh, it's going to be interesting.
Oh, it will be. So,
we've
put that on your calendar for next week. Oh, we are going to have to change the day that this is broadcast on. I've got a new shift at work. I'm not going to be free anymore on Wednesdays. I'm going to be free on Tuesdays. So we're going to have to shift it back to Tuesdays again. Hopefully, yeah. Let's make the decision now to switch it back to Tuesdays for next week.
Okay.
And we will do that. And even if my schedule hasn't changed over yet, I will do it then.
Okay.
And so,
well, and
okay.
We're going to be changing my schedule at work, too, because summer's coming, so we get busy and crazy and shit like that. So
right.
We may have to put it to, like, 10 p.m. Pacific, or 10 p.m. Eastern, just because I'm not sure yet what schedule I'm going to be having. Either I start at 4 and end at 2:30 or at 12:30. Or I start at 8:30 and end at, like, 5. So they're still working out that scheduling, so I don't know exactly.
Well, we'll get it worked out, and we'll put it up on not only Woodwoes Radio
and all over the
Tumblr.com, but we'll put it up on my Tumblr, which is wide-world-joy@tumblr.com. And if it's a really radical change, I'll put it up on my website, too. And we'll try to let everybody know, but this is really only going to affect the people that are listening live, which, given that there's only about 5 of them total, and most of y'all download this, it's probably not going to be that big of a deal to most people. So, next Tuesday, 7 p.m., we will talk. I'll pull up a relationships tarot spread. We can look at that, and we can do the spread and the interpretation, and the spread and the interpretation, and then talk about polyamory in the second hour next week.
Excellent. All right. So, folks, thank you again for joining us. We have, like, less than a minute left. In honor of our wonderful Star Wars Day, I would like to wish everyone may the Force be with you.
Take care, everyone. May the Force be with you. Have a good life. Bye.
Bye-bye, folks.